Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go on a Friday. Live in Los Angeles. We only win here. It's the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be watching or listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1, 1 hour from now. 3-3 last week. We added an extra game. Only 5 picks in our blazing 5 this week. That seems appropriate. Joy Taylor is joining me. Again, I was telling the staff this morning, I said, every time one of these L.A. teams, since I've moved here, gets into a big game, NBA Finals, World Series, a play-in game, Tom Brady comes to play the Rams. We don't win all of our games here, but the big ones, whatever it is. And it's funny, Joy, because a lot of the big markets in the country, Chicago's teams are kind of a mess, New York's are an absolute mess, Philadelphia, Washington, a lot of big cities in America, it can't get their pro teams right. Whatever it is, there's a magic in the air in Los Angeles. If it's a big game, if it's a deciding series game, the L.A. team's winning, and there's no more popular team right now in Los Angeles than the Dodgers.
Is it us, or is it LeBron?
let's be honest about it. This city has spent a lot of money on a lot of great players, yeah. And the Dodgers needed every dollar last night. So let's start with that, the Dodgers and the San Francisco Giants. I know. Check, swing. There is no better team here. The Dodgers really, they paid more than the Giants for hitting, and they got a little better hitting. These teams played 24 times this year. They split 12-12. I mean, literally, the Giants won 107 games this year. The Dodgers won 106. It would have been the Dodgers won 107 and the Giants won 106, but there was a check swing that went the Giants' way during the regular season. I mean, the batting average. Dodgers hit 244. Giants hit 247. Home runs. Dodgers hit 242. Giants hit 246. There is no best team. We said this yesterday. It's going to come down to a run. Everybody wants reseeding. Let's have them play. They shouldn't have played that series. It doesn't matter. If these teams played 9 games, they'd go to a game 9. They play 7, they'd go to a game 7. They played 5, they went to a game 5. Fans need the definitive, we are better. Dodgers aren't necessarily better. What the Dodgers did, even the controversy in this series is even. Earlier this year, the Giants got an umpiring break on a check swing. That one in the division. And then last night, the Dodgers get an umpiring break. Even the controversies were even in this series. But you get what you pay for in baseball. It's the one sport with no salary cap, and the Dodgers have been more willing to open the wallets. There's plenty of money in San Francisco. It's Silicon Valley. Those fans are paying a lot for beers and programs, too. But in the end, everybody's complaining about that check swing. Well, the numbers told you Wilmer Flores wasn't going to drive in anybody anyway because the Giants couldn't drive in anybody the entire series. They won one of their games 1-0. In 3 of their losses, they scored 5 runs. They stopped hitting after game 1. The Dodgers paid a lot for Mookie Betts. It was worth it. He went 4-for-4. The Dodgers pay a lot for Cody Bellinger. He hit .294 in the playoffs with 3 RBIs. Dodgers paid a lot for Max Scherzer. Well, guess what? He was on the mound at the end. Who do the Giants pay for? Buster Posey. He was great in the series. Chris Bryant, they didn't pay a lot for because it was a trade, but he was unbelievable. And he's a free agent. So San Francisco, my recommendation, because the Dodgers would re-sign a Chris Bryant. You got to re-sign a Chris Bryant. I mean, this is all about in baseball, you kind of get what you pay for. Now, you have the Rays, and you have Moneyball with the A's. Those teams aren't winning the World Series. You can be good and you can be competitive, but the Dodgers, they did this against the Cardinals. We just talked about this 2 weeks ago, and they did it against the Giants. They went all in on Trey Turner, all in on Max Scherzer, all in on Mookie Betts. They needed every single dollar and player, and they do have the best team in baseball, and my guess is, wherever they play and whoever they, this is going to come down to their bullpen and out. They've had so many injuries, so many up-and-down performers like Bellinger this year. So here is the check swing controversy, and to the Giants' credit, they added context to it. They admit they got a break earlier in this year against the Dodgers on a check swing, and here's the ending.
0-2, Scherzer to Flores. Just
outside. He went around. Strike three. Gabe Morales, the first base umpire. The Dodgers are going to the National League Championship Series. These two teams won 109 games coming into this one. One game separated them in the standings. One game separates them in the National League Division Series, and one run separates them. My goodness, it was unbelievable.
Gabe Kapler is the manager. Didn't go crazy. Acknowledged when it was all over. These teams are fantastic. Probably the two best teams in baseball. And as everybody predicted, it'd go five. I said yesterday, I thought the Giants would win 3-2. Here's Gabe after.
The immediate emotion is frustration, right? And that's happening all throughout the game. And it's heightened on the last play of the game. I'm way, way past the frustration that I felt in that moment. And I really do think our players and our staff are too. I just don't know how much sense it makes for us on our side, you know, to pick that apart. I don't know how helpful it's going to be.
Two best teams in baseball went to the final moment. It was going to be a messed up bunt, a wild pitch, a check swing. It's almost appropriate that's how the series ended. An inch on a check swing. That's almost perfectly appropriate because that's all that separated two amazing, well-managed, well-run franchises and two great baseball teams. All right, let's talk the game last night. I'm not going to talk Brady right now. I want to talk about Jalen Hurts. So it's very interesting. We're all kind of waiting to see as all these young quarterbacks come into the league. He going to make it? He going to make it? He going to make it? Now, you can generally tell with a big pocket guy, oh, yeah, Trevor Lawrence, yeah, that's what it's supposed to look like. It gets difficult with playmakers. And that's what Jalen Hurts is. And I said this yesterday and perhaps the previous 2 days. It's harder for me to guess on playmakers because will the coaching staff and the organization have the patience to let a Kyler Murray or a Lamar Jackson grow as they run around, use their feet for a couple years as they grow as pocket players? And I feel the same way about Jalen Hurts. It's almost like Lamar Jackson is a great example. Like I had issues and I don't get it, doesn't look it. And all of a sudden you're like, after about 7, 8, 9 games, you're like, yeah, it's going to work. The Eagles have the opposite problem with their young quarterback that most teams do. I mean, they only had 16 first downs. They only passed for 113 yards. They have no time of possession. They don't run the football, don't pass it particularly well. But they were 3-for-3 in the red zone against a really talented defense. Why? Because that's what playmakers do. So when you watch Jalen Hurts, it's not pretty. Struggles on the deep ball, misses layups. I'm not denying any of that. But so did Kyler Murray in the first year. And so did Lamar Jackson looked a little different. Is that, yes, this year they could not keep up with the Cowboys' offense or Kansas City's offense. Well, of course not. Right now they can't. Either could Arizona in the first year with Kyler Murray. The reality, though, is if you look at the numbers on Jalen Hurts, just go to the data. It's very interesting. His passer rating, 88.6. That's not terrible. He's a kid. His completion percentage, 62.5. Well, that's good enough for the number of starts he's had. 8 touchdowns, 4 picks. All right, that's 2-to-1. You'd like 2.5-to-1. Not terrible. And he's rushed for 5 touchdowns. Got to count those two. So I'm a couple weeks ago, I'm like, it just doesn't look right to me. And then I'm starting to get to a point where the college game's now into the pro game. It really comes down to the Philadelphia Eagles organization. Because the Ravens went all in on Lamar, and Arizona went all in on Kyler. And we know Cincinnati is, they drafted another wide receiver. They are all in on Joe Burrow. So I watched Jalen Hurts, and I'm like, yeah, it's not much to look at, but why are they so good in the red zone? Because of Jalen Hurts. He's hard to defend. And the rest of the numbers aren't terrible. So I think there's just sometimes when you have this kind of cultural change that's happening in football is I am just going to sit and watch it. And even over the last 3 weeks, I'm like, I don't know. I could argue either way. It may just come down to this. Does he get the right coach? Does he get the support? Is the owner all in? Is the GM draft players to help him? I mean, it really may come down to that. They went and got a receiver that year, this year. Now, today, they traded Zach Ertz away for a corner. Now, the good news is Philadelphia is pretty stocked at tight end, and Arizona is clearly going for it. They're going to go for it and get Zach Ertz. They're not great at tight end. That's not necessarily a negative sign for Jalen Hurts because Philly's got tight ends. That's not the issue. They've upgraded wide receiver. Their bigger issue is the offensive line healthy. It's been hit and miss last 3 years. But I really don't know watching Jalen Hurts. I watched them and I'm like, everybody was bailing on Lamar Jackson. The only people now that think Lamar Jackson can't play are dummies. Like, I don't want to be a dummy. I'm just going to watch it. I don't have an answer. It could work. It could not. It may depend largely on the support Jalen Hurts gets. All right. Seth Joyner, the Eagles, former Eagle, will join us a little after 1 hour from now, or about 1 hour, blazing five next hour as well. Great to have you in on a Friday. So much good sports. What a great night it was last night. I didn't do chicken parm.
No?
I went and got garlic chicken and turkey chili. It was a protein fest and just sat there and watched sports all night. It was
you
so
had
much
garlic fun. Chicken and
yeah.
turkey.
Oh, and I could chili. Smell it. I you know when you have garlic, when you can I could smell.
I love garlic.
Oh, so do I. But I sat there and I thought, oh, there's nobody else in this room, thank God.
Have
I
you
can
ever had
smell
the garlic
me.
Fries at Dodgers?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with
it's
garlic.
Like whole chunks of fresh garlic. It's so good, though.
Yeah, Dodger Stadium has really good food, yeah. actually.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Simply Safe, big news. Wireless outdoor security camera engineered with all the same advanced tech. Learn more. 20% off the new system. SimplySafeColin.com. So, it's not that I'm ever bored with great football, but it is so easy now for Tom Brady with all these weapons. At least sometimes in New England, you could see him struggle, especially in the last 3 or 4 years. You could see Brady getting frustrated. There was drama. He's so good this year, it's boring. It's pitch and catch. And Tampa is the opposite of last year. The offense is way ahead of the defense. The offense has more talent. It's why the Buccaneers now are elite. It's because of their offense. They are so deep now that they literally showcased their tight end O.J. Howard last night, many suggesting they want to trade him at the deadline and wanted people to see that he still got it. This pivot for Tampa from a losing franchise, a team with no momentum, a head coach that comes out of retirement to winning a Super Bowl, 5-1, every general manager in the league has to look at this and think, let's just make an offer for Aaron Rodgers. That's what I keep thinking here, that Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson, Tom Brady is making old guys moving to new teams, and Russell doesn't really classify, even Aaron doesn't, as an old guy. But I keep thinking about Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers. These GMs around this league, two teams, Chargers, Bucks, made an offer for Tom Brady. It is now remarkable. It is so easy for him. And I never see Brady as a cocky guy, but it is so easy for him that yesterday he told Hannah Storm, I'm not joking, I could literally play, he said, until I'm 50 or 55 if I wanted to. I don't think I will. My physical body won't be the problem. It's just missing too much time with my family. He's like literally they're showcasing a tight end last night on the road against a team that's not terrible, Philadelphia. He may play till 55. This is sometimes people do stuff in your business. You don't even have to work with them. But they do stuff in your business and they make you money without you knowing it. Like Brady is making so many veteran quarterbacks money right now. It's now embarrassing that only the Chargers and the Bucks went all in. You're like, what? There's like nine teams in this league that can't get the quarterback right. It's just hard to wrap your brains around. Loserville, USA, Tampa, Florida, couldn't win games. You just insert one great piece. They already had good players, and they are now winning easily on the road, showcasing tight ends. Tom May played a 50. It's hard to wrap your brain around it. Joy with the news.
No. Turn on the news. This is the Herd Line News.
Well, let's stick with that game last night. The Eagles were a little choppy, but they had some momentum going after scoring 15 unanswered points to come back against the Bucks last night, but a little under 6 minutes to go, Eagles defensive end Jannard Avery was called for a taunting penalty.
I know, it's weird.
After going face-to-face with Leonard Fournette, that call gave Tampa 15 yards and a first down, and the Bucks wound up clinching 28-22, the win on that drive. But after the game, Nick Sirianni took responsibility for his team getting that call.
That's first on me. I got to do a better job of cleaning up all those things. We know that we can't make those self-inflicted wounds. You know, I know that. They know that. We'll continue to harp on that. We'll continue to work to get it right. But again, that was unacceptable, and that falls on me first. And so I got to do a better job of getting everybody doing the right things out there and keeping our composure out there.
It's the right thing for him to say. In that spot. And I'm going to try and remain calm here, but my God, I mean, get rid of this. I did not overreact to this when the rule first came out at the beginning of the season and in preseason. I didn't think that it was going to be this bad. But at the point in which a subjective call based off of the emotion of a player.
That's a dumb call. That's just a bad
call. It affected the game.
Yeah, that's, I mean, like, we all know, we can all admit why the taunting penalty was created. For over the top, spike it in your face, where guys get ugly. Not that you're going to get a Malice in the Palace thing, but what you don't want is kids at the game. You still see kids at NFL games. You don't want this, like, this game's got enough regulated violence. We don't want fist fights. Like, so we get why they're doing it. But there was no moment in the history of football that right
is
there
taunting. It,
or a penalty.
But also, that's the problem with the spirit of the penalty. It is a subjective call by the referee in that moment, and it affected the outcome of the game. Now, you can say what you want, that it's Tom Brady and they were going to win anyway or whatever, but the reality is that's not how history will remember it. We don't know.
Yeah.
It affected the outcome of the game. And what's going to happen is that this is going to affect someone's season later in the year when tensions are higher, when the stakes are higher.
Yeah.
If God forbid it's a playoff game that a call like this is made based off of a ref in a moment saying, maybe that was a little bit too much.
If you look at baseball, what play are we bothered with baseball last night? It's not a bang-bang play at first. It's a subjective call by an umpire at first base, right? It's a subject call.
Yeah.
The reason the NFL, that we don't generally spend a lot of time harping on officials, NBA, it's like every day, umpiring, because subjective calls are harder. So the NFL, for most of its life, doesn't have a lot of subjective calls. We complain about pass interference.
But also, we can...
This is a subjective call.
We can review a lot of calls. So so while really all calls are subjective, because it is a human watching something and then making a call, this is a determination of emotion being just part of the game or being too much.
And you can argue over this. You can't argue over offside.
Right.
You can't argue over illegal motion. Football, overwhelmingly, we argue about pass interference. It's one of the only could-go-either-way calls. Like, that's
right.
It.
And then even sometimes those are very obviously pass interference.
So the NFL has given us another subjective call, which is a layer an official now has to, how do I feel in the moment? So I understand doing it, but there's the controversy of calls. We saw it in baseball last night. It's not on the 90% of this stuff, if it's written into the rules, we don't have a problem with it.
Right.
We argue over forcing people, referees moving with the action, and make quick calls on subjective stuff. The fewer of those you have in sports, probably the better.
And this is about emotion. So how do you determine if someone is just jumping up excited they made a tackle or they're trying to incite a fight? I solved this already. We already have the solution. If you don't want people to get in a brawl, which is the reason this exists, right? It's because we're not trying to regulate emotion out of the game. We're not trying to make the league less fun. That's what we were told. This is about keeping people from brawling. The punishment for getting into a fight has to be so egregious, similar to the NBA,
right,
that no matter what's going on the court, in the back of your mind, you know you're about to lose this amount of money. You're about to miss this amount of games if you get involved in it. It's an easy solve, and then it takes it out of the referee's hands because this affected the game last night. A little extra note on the Eagles. They just traded tight end Zach Ertz to the Cardinals for a 2022 fifth-round pick and cornerback Tay Gowan.
So Arizona's telling you we're going all in.
They should be.
Yep. We're going all in. We see vulnerability with the Niners. We see vulnerability with Seattle. So it's a ramp. I mean, that's what they're doing, basically. They see their division now. I see a couple vulnerable teams. We're going to double down, get more production. I think it's a great move by Arizona.
Yeah, and the Eagles have been talking about like this. Yes. This was coming to an end anyway, so that's a great move for Arizona. So the Bills bounce back in a big way after their week one loss to Pittsburgh, and they are on a four-game winning streak with two shutouts. They also made a huge impression with a crucial win over the Chiefs on Sunday night. And Drew Brees thinks Buffalo has proven they're the team to beat. He said, "I think the Bills are the best team in football right now, and it's not even close. What they've done defensively, pitched two shutouts in the last four games. They've scored darn near 40 points a game. They've got a little bit of everything. It all starts with a great defense and a good run game, and they can do that, supplement that with their big playability. They're just tough to defend."
Their O-line is their issue. It's kind of middle of the pack, but they drafted three offensive linemen, and this organization last 5 years with this GM drafts well. So that's their hole. It's not terrible, but they addressed it. So last couple years, they've gone big D-line. They had no pass rush. Now they've gone and addressed the offensive line. So my takeaway is this offense could get better. Is the season go? Because O-linemen take a while. So, I mean, they're just really well run. Again, we talk about this. Good owner, good GM, good coach. You know, you hit on Josh Allen, but upstairs, they got a bunch of smart people.
They're very well run. Yeah. I think it's splitting hairs between the Bills and Arizona, but the Bills have a lot of momentum right now, and they are working it. So Odell has not had a huge impact on the Browns' offense, at least not what they would have hoped for. And he said he's not worrying too much about how many targets he gets. He's worried about winning a championship.
I can't sit here and lie like I don't want the ball. Like I tell you, every time I get up here, they don't pay James Harden for defense. You know what I mean? He's a shooter. Like I feel like I'm a shooter. I know that I bring a lot of teaching, a lot of attention to defenses on the other end, and other people are going to be open. And, you know, you just got to live with that. The ultimate goal is to win the championship. And I feel like I'm in a great situation to do that.
Well, he's missed 33 total games due to injury in his career, which has been an issue for getting some momentum, similar to, you know, the Tua conversation. It's hard to get some momentum going, especially with Cleveland. I don't know that this is really an issue for Cleveland. I think that Odell, and we've talked about this a lot, I think Odell has done a really good job of buying into what Cleveland was doing. I don't think it's ever been a good fit for Odell there. Not anyone's particular fault, but he's right. He is a shooter. I mean, could you imagine Odell with the Chargers?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. We were sitting there this morning thinking about places he works. And, you know, what team needs one more playmaker? I'd argue Green Bay. Plus, they have a veteran quarterback. He can handle Odell. I'm not sure if he'd want to go there, but you could trade him. You know, a team that feels like, I mean, if the Rams didn't get DeSean Jackson, I could see the Rams going and getting him.
Yeah.
Like a team that thinks they're in the Super Bowl window and they're just going to they'll trade a pick because this is the year.
Well, like Arizona doesn't.
They don't need it. Baltimore doesn't anymore. So, but those are the
kind of Tampa doesn't.
No, Green Bay, Rams don't. It's, you know, there's not a lot. To be honest, it's nothing against Odell. Most of the good teams have an over-the-top component.
Right.
Kansas City does. Buffalo does. There's a small market. And by the way, Devontae Adams is great. Could you argue they need just a little more? Because they don't have a number two receiver. You could make an argument Green Bay's not a terrible place to be. Just another guy. Because Devontae Adams is getting to a point now. It feels like Aaron, that's the only guy he trusts.
Well, he could work in Cleveland, but that's just not the offense that they run. Like, they want to run the ball.
Yeah.
They want to keep Baker's passes lower, and that's the recipe for winning in Cleveland. So yeah, there's not a whole lot of places that he can go, but I like his mentality though. Like, yeah. Odell is right. He is a shooter. He's an NBA player in the NFL. He always has been. And unfortunately, the situation in Cleveland has just kind of marginalized what his talent is.
Yeah. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Albert Breer, sponsored by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing, joins us. Senior reporter, Monday Morning Quarterback. Let's start with Odell. So, I mean, here's the thing, Albert. His cap hit next year, both he and Jarvis Landry are big cap hits. They'd keep Jarvis. He's far more productive. He and Baker have some symmetry. They're not going to keep Odell next year. It's fairly obvious if you look at the cap hit. The trade deadline's coming up. I mean, they would have to entertain calls, right? They don't have a lot of needs on this team, but they do have to get cheaper in some spots because some bills are coming due. I think he's a guy to move. Your thoughts?
I just think that they'd be too thin at receiver right now, and you'd have to be bringing some value back, and his value is super low right now compared to where you would see it maybe in March or April. And Colin, I think one thing that a lot of people are missing is just kind of where the finances are across the NFL right now. 21 of the 32 teams, that's about two-thirds of the NFL teams, have less than $6 million left in cap space in 2021. And a lot of those teams, teams like the Buccaneers, teams like the Packers, are leveraged next year too and having mortgaged some of their contracts already. And on top of that, you've got cash budgets, which are have been stretched to some degree because of COVID. And so I think it's going to be a quieter trade deadline. And I know the way the Browns operate, they always think about things from a value perspective. Right now, if you trade Odell Beckham, you'd be selling awfully low on the asset. And I just think, you know, you kind of like add that to the fact that they'd be awfully thin without him at receiver. My guess is he's probably not traded now, but I think it'd be in play in the spring.
All right, Zach Ertz, Philadelphia's got some depth at tight end. This had been rumored for a while. And so Arizona, you know, my takeaway is Arizona sees some vulnerability with the Seahawks and the 49ers, and they're like, hey, this is the time to make the move. It's us and the Rams. We're both playing well and pretty healthy. What do you make of the move overall?
Yeah, I mean, a couple things. Number one, there's the obvious need now. Max Williams, who had been really the one and only tight end who's produced for Cliff Kingsbury the last couple of years, he's out for the year. So they had a very clear and obvious need there. It's not a huge position in their offense, but they can use a guy who can be productive. And this is a guy who should be able to come in and hit the ground running. You know, and then the second piece of it to me is sort of where they are as a franchise right now. And that I think both Cliff and Steve Kime, the general manager there, were fighting for their jobs coming into the season. Now, the heat's off a little bit because of where they are. But you think about kind of the spot they are organizationally, having gone into the season in that position. And also, after this year, Kyler Murray is eligible for a new contract, which could change the dynamic there completely. So if you're the Cardinals right now, you see this maybe as the end of the window where you have your quarterback on a rookie contract because he's going to need a new contract fairly soon. And so this is the time to continue being aggressive. And so I really like the idea of going and getting Zach Ertz. And like you said, I do think that they sense that the NFC West might be there for the taking.
Regardless of what anybody thinks of John Gruden, the organization still needs a coach. They have an interim. I thought Mark Davis sort of hid from the situation and forced his quarterback and his GM to take all the bullets. But regardless, at some point, this is an NFL franchise with some really good weapons and a very, very talented quarterback that I think would be attractive. Vegas is a great city to live in. Where do you think they, I mean, we know we have an interim coach, but do you think this is, will they go out? I mean, they spent money on Gruden. Will they go out big game hunting when they look for a coach?
I think there's an opportunity to here. I mean, like you said, there's a lot going for that team. I mean, I know we've sort of regarded them as a dumpster fire in recent years. They've actually sort of stabilized from a stadium and revenue standpoint. They're in a stronger position maybe than they've ever been before. You know, and then you look at the roster, some of the young guys who've come along, the receivers, the offensive line, some of the young players they have up there, you know, and where they've been even from a wins and losses standpoint, 7-9 and 8-8 the last 2 years is better than they've been. And so I think there's something to offer there for a head coach. And maybe that means they go and do, you know, what the Niners did with Kyle Shanahan, what the Rams did with Sean McVay, what the Chargers did with Brandon Staley, and trying to go and find their own guy. But they could go big game hunting too. And so I sort of wonder, you know, you look at the Raiders' history with diversity, how ugly the situation was for them. If you're the Raiders, do you take a big swing? Do you maybe go and try to get like somebody like Mike Tomlin out of Pittsburgh, who's been going sort of year to year on his contract?
Yeah.
I wonder if Mark Davis has something like that in him. He went down that road with Gruden. Obviously, it took him a few years to get John Gruden back to the Raiders. But I wonder if there's some sitting head coach out there, and Mike Tomlin's just the one that pops into my head because he's been in Pittsburgh for 15 years now, but would he be willing to make a run at somebody like Tomlin to kind of rebrand the franchise in Vegas going forward?
Yeah, that's really, really interesting. Also, Eric Bieniemy, that's an interesting one. You come from somebody in division, you weaken the Chiefs perhaps, you strengthen yourself, take away from a rival. So the Tua, he may play this weekend. He's about ready to play. I just saw some video during the break from a jolly old England of Tua in the countryside completing passes. So it's, you know, Joy and I have been talking about this. is that all of us, you, me, Joy, too, it doesn't matter who it is, anybody that's got a professional career, mm-hmm. he has no career momentum. He came injured. He's injured again. He got benched. He didn't get voted captain. The kid needs some career momentum or it's going to be over. And it's interesting, Albert, the next 6 weeks for Tua, Texans, yeah. Falcons, Jets, Jags, am I overstating it saying the next month and a half, the decision will be made. He needs wins, and he needs to look good because there's some weak opponents coming to town.
1,000,000%. I don't think there's any question. I mean, if he can't get it done over the course of the next month and a half, 2 months, and they find themselves out of the playoff picture, I think there's a better than good chance that they're on the quarterback market, and whether that means Deshaun Watson or Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson, it'll be somebody in 2022. And I think one of the reasons why, if Tua struggles, that means the Dolphins don't make the playoffs, right? The Dolphins don't make the playoffs. That means Brian Flores as head coach and Chris Greer as general manager are going into year four without having made the playoffs. Are you willing to push all your chips to the middle of the table at that point? Because there's not going to be a year five if you don't make the playoffs in year four, right? At that point, are you willing to push all your chips into the middle of the table and bet that Tua Tagovailoa can be the guy long term? And I think this goes for a lot of teams in the AFC where, you know, you're looking right now, and if you're one of these teams that you have a quarterback that you like, but maybe you're not completely sold on, and you're looking and you see Justin Herbert in LA, and you see Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City, and you see Lamar Jackson in Baltimore, and Joe Burrow in Cincinnati, and Josh Allen in Buffalo, do you think you can scale that mountain with the quarterback that you have based on those guys
right.
and the fact that those guys will probably be around for the next 10 years?
Yeah.
I think that that's sort of what's facing the Dolphins
yep.
and Tua right now.
Yep. No, that's exactly right. You have Bill Polian always said that. When we got Peyton Manning, we drafted. We knew what people were drafting against. They wanted pass rushers. We had to be good on the O-line. Like you have to be able to look at your personnel mm-hmm. and say, what do we need 10 years going forward? Got to have a plan. Finally, people often think things in the NFL, but they won't say them. And Justin Herbert is putting up these 3-touchdown, no interception games, one after another after another. He's on his second coach. It doesn't matter. And I just wonder, behind the scenes, Herbert Mahomes, mm-hmm. occasionally do people broach the, is he as good as Mahomes? What are you hearing about Herbert behind the scenes? Nobody wants to put a name on it,
yeah.
right? You get crushed for that, but your thoughts on his ascension.
So, I mean, let's start here. I do this quarterback poll every September, and I ask coaches, GMs, scouts, assistant coaches across the NFL, who they believe the top five quarterbacks are going to be at the end of the year. So they're projecting forward.
Okay.
And the last 2 years, this is a poll of 50, 60 NFL types. Mahomes has been a runaway winner. He was almost unanimous last year. Not as strong this year, but close to it. So I think Patrick Mahomes is still where he has been. That said, I mean, I've had, you know, I'm on a couple of these text strings with some executives. And, you know, I've sort of batted that question around. Like, is there a quarterback in the NFL that you would rather have for the next 10 years than Justin Herbert? And I'm telling you, Colin, it's like, well, yeah, probably Patrick, but it's not like you're getting shut down right away. And so I do think that there's some momentum like here with Justin Herbert where other teams are looking at it and saying, you know, I if you had to have somebody for the next 10 years, maybe this is the guy, and you have to see more, but maybe he does wind up being that guy. And I think the highest compliment any of these guys can get, right? Teams right now are going back and looking at what did we miss on Justin Herbert. That's yeah. what they've done with Tom Brady for 20 years already, okay? 2 years into the league, teams are already going back with their scouts and looking. We didn't have a great grade on Justin Herbert, so what exactly did we miss here? What part of the equation did we overvalue? What part of the equation did we undervalue? It's a really interesting dynamic, especially when you consider the guy was the 6th overall pick. It's not like he was a 5th or 6th round pick.
Yeah. Albert Breer, Monday Morning Quarterback. Great seeing you, my man. Have a great weekend.
All right. Thanks, Colin.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, you have to be able to self-scout and figure out why didn't we have a very high grade on him. But I would say this with quarterback, too. It's really hard. It's not like a speed position or a jump position or a catch position. Some of it is just like, you know, cognitive. Do you like to get hit? What happens if you have a bad coordinator? You know, I still contend Josh Allen's a great example. In fact, I would use Lamar and Josh Allen because they look like superstars, right? good God, they got really good coordinators. I mean, Greg Roman and Brian Daboll really deserve a lot of credit. So it's not that they wouldn't have succeeded, but it's like everything else in life. Nobody lives on an island. I've had great luck, Joy and I. I mean, there's just, you know, you'd be fine. And Josh and Lamar would have some success, but it's like the rest of life. Your support system ends up being a really big component, and we don't want to talk about that too much.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
He's Mike Harmon. I'm Dan Beyer, and we have a brand new fantasy football podcast called I Want Your Flex. Twice a week, every Tuesday and Friday, we come up with new episodes to not only look back at what happened, what you need to do at that minute, and also look ahead of what's coming up in the fantasy football world.
That's right, Dan. Every week we're going to scour the waiver wire to find the pickups to turbo boost your fantasy lineup, sits, starts, fantasy football players' rankings to get you ready to dominate the competition.
Listen to I Want Your Flex with Mike Harmon and me, Dan Beyer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Blazing 5, top of next hour off a 3-3 week. Wolf and Shepherd, dress shoe made and worn by athletes like Gronk and Steve Nash. Fantastic. Business meets athletic shoe, athletic souls. Go to wolfandshepherd.com. Wolfandshepherd.com. So, Brandon Staley, the Chargers go to Baltimore and they play the Ravens. Ravens did play on Monday Night Football, short week, but this year teams off of Monday Night Football are 4-0. So, you know, if you've won on Monday Night Football, you win the next week. It's whatever it is. Maybe it's less hitting in practice. I don't know. But it's not an issue this year with having one day less prep. So Brandon Staley is talking about Lamar Jackson. And, you know, we've said this before. Sometimes in life you don't know until you know. Right? And Lamar Jackson, is it going to work? Oh, yeah, I guess it's totally different and can work. You don't know till you know. And Brandon Staley, who faces Lamar this week, talked about him.
You guys are all seeing what I'm seeing, is that you're seeing a player that's never played in the NFL. There have been some guys similar, but there hasn't been anybody like Lamar Jackson. He's truly one of a kind. He's truly a rare player, rare competitor. And all you got to do is go back all the way back to high school, Louisville, you name it. Everywhere he goes, you know, he's doing something, you know, amazing right before your eyes. And since he's become the quarterback of that team, you know, you've seen what's happened. And I think the thing that's unique about Lamar is that there's danger on every snap.
Yeah, you know, it's like people that doubt Lamar now are just stubborn. And you'll find in life, I look at sometimes people that doubt Lamar, and if you go to their Twitter feed, they're stubborn on politics. They're stubborn on everything. They're stubborn on sports. Stubborn people are not stubborn on one isolated story. They're stubborn on everything. You're a dummy now. He's got 42 starts. It's legitimate. Like it used to be, you had to give a guy 3 years, 16 games, 3 years, 48 starts. But now these kids, you don't get 48 starts. You need about 30. You need about a year and a half to 2 years because they all come in with far more high school and college snaps and quarterback coaches. We got 42 starts. Folks, he's got 103 passer rating. He completes 65% of his throws and has 3 touchdowns to a pick. We got enough. He's 34-8 as a starter. The question now, and by the way, can he play from behind? It was a legitimate question. It's the kind of question a general manager asks. Oh, that's been solved too. But it was a legitimate question. Running quarterbacks often play downhill with a lead. We said this about Giannis. Remember we talked about Giannis, bad free throw shooter. He plays downhill. Can Giannis come from behind and win? Can he hit free throws late? He didn't. They won the championship. You don't know till you know. But the idea that, well, can Lamar get to a Super Bowl? Don't be a dummy. Jared Goff and Jimmy Garoppolo got there. That's just a dumb argument now. Now, will he? That's a different argument. Can he is one argument. Will he is a different argument. Dan Marino got to one. As a rookie, never got back. Aaron Rodgers, been to two. With a well-run franchise. Peyton Manning, took him 9 years. So don't confuse. And this is so obvious, so I feel stupid saying this because it's so obvious. But there's a lot of people that can't separate these two. Will he and can he? You may have the brains that you could be a doctor, but you may choose not to be a doctor. You know, Can he get to a Super Bowl? Of course he can get to a Super Bowl. Of course. But he just so happens now to have Josh Allen, Patrick Mahomes, Justin Herbert, Joe Burrow. The wall being built up, you know, Brady figured this out, I think, early and said, get me out of the AFC. I don't want any part of this. You know, I don't know if he will get there. But don't be a dummy. Like, the argument, it's over. I mean, first of all, the kid has had 2 full years of playing. Been an MVP in one and won a playoff game in the next. He can't even rent a car. He's 24. So the 2 full years I've had with him, best player in the league and won a playoff game. You tell me he can't win 2 or 3 playoff games. Really? This is impossible. Stop. Will he, can he? We know the answer to one. Yes, of course he can. And that's why we said this week, he's lightning. It's unpredictable. There's nothing like it. There's just nothing like Lamar in the market. It's fascinating. All right, Blazing 5, Seth Joyner, Brady Quinn, lively show, hour 2 next.